This Sunday. Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they see them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrill to the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
School may be out forever, but Motormouth Radio will live on forever with your hosts, Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer, here today to entertain you. And what were you laughing at, Chris? How
are you? I don't know. Motormouth Radio, the more you listen, the more I'm amazed.
Yeah. Well, that happens. So let me tell you something. We have a great music is personal today, folks. It's definitely personal on my side, but we can explain that later. More importantly than that, Chris, we're going to have a great show today. We're going to have one of our recurring favorite guests, our old friend Uncle Tony. Not Uncle Avunj, but Uncle Tony is going to be coming in today from, of course, Uncle Tony's Garage. You know him from YouTube and from other places. And he's going to share some wisdom and share his light with us.
I know, and I'm looking forward to this because I love watching. I mean, I haven't seen him in a while, but the ones that I did see of Uncle Tony's Garage, just how he takes what he has and just makes the best out of it is, to me, is remarkable. And I also like the fact that he doesn't mind driving cars in primer.
No.
He doesn't mind driving cars with no door panels on them. It's no doors on them.
You know, he's an old school guy like ourselves, and that's why I like him. I follow him. I've been following him for a long time and have a great time. But so we're going to talk to him about some stuff. And, I have a couple topics. We'll talk about some things that he was doing video-wise. What's new with you? Anything happening with the fleet or the?
I had a laugh. I went to go change the oil in my Explorer, and I've come to realize I don't drive as much as I used to.
Yeah,
but I didn't think this was going to happen. I wrote down, usually when I change the oil, I do like what you do, Ray. I write it down, but I write it down just on the box that the oil filter came in. I rip the tab off it. I write down whatever the mileage is, and I put it aside. And when I go to change the oil, I just take a note of what the mileage was.
Okay.
So I look at the mileage, and it has 107,000 miles on the card. I'm looking at the card. It says 107. So that's when I last changed it. But it was back in December. Okay, put the card back. I go to the Explorer to go check the mileage. It's 108.
Wow.
I drove less than 1,000 miles in almost, 5 months?
Now,
6 months.
See, I get that with my Impala, which just sits there, and that'll have maybe 1,000 miles a year. Now, you know, something funny, you mentioned that. I have an issue like that myself. I have to, June. Next week is June, and I have to have my Fiat inspected. You know, I get cars throughout the year. And I remember what I did last year. I literally took that car out of the garage, had it inspected, and I kind of brought it back and shoved it back in the garage. I didn't drive it for the rest of the year, that car.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's a good reason. And you say, why? Why wouldn't you drive your sports car?
Why? Why wouldn't you drive your sports car, right?
It's because I changed my daily driver. Now, you say, how does that work? Well, yeah. I had the Mazda. I was driving the Mazda 3. And what I would typically do is drive to the Fiat's in a garage off-site. I rent a garage next town over. So I would drive the Mazda there, pull the Fiat out, put the Mazda in that garage, and take the Fiat. I'd have it out for sometimes a month. You know, when weather was bad, I'd swap it. Well, now with the FJ, I don't know. I haven't verified that it'll fit in that garage because of the height. I don't know. Maybe it will, but I need another set of eyes. So because of that, and I wasn't just going to leave that vehicle in, you know, someone else's space. That's just not really the right thing to do, you know?
Sure thing. Holy moly.
So that one didn't get many miles at all. Maybe get, you know, 20. I don't know. So
it's funny you should mention that because my CX-9, the Mazda, will fit in the garage with about maybe about 3 inches between the open garage door and the roof of the truck of the Mazda. The Explorer is different, and it all comes down to the antenna.
The radio antenna. Really?
Because the radio antenna on the Mazda is like, it looks like a little pimple that sits on the back right above the rear window. It's like a little bump that sits up there.
That's the satellite. Little shark fin?
No, it's not a shark fin. Oh, it looks like a zit.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got you.
It looks like a mole on the top. No hair on it, but just a little. The Explorer has got a standard antenna that sticks out the back, like the old Buick Roadmasters that would come up from the windshield. This one is just shy of the rear hatch, sits up there. And that will hit the bottom of the garage door.
Okay.
That'll hit that. So whenever I have to put the Explorer in the garage, I got to go get a spackle bucket, put it behind the truck, jump up, unscrew the antenna from the roof.
Right.
Because I can't reach up there. So I need the assistance of a spackle bucket. It's perfect. Just boom, just get up there. Okay, pick it up and off and running. And I'm always forever forgetting that I'm turning on the radio. I'm like, why can't the radio? Why am I not getting the signal?
What I haven't forgotten is we had a flashing light. So let's go to the phones and say, hi, caller, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hi, guys. Listen, I could be wrong, but I don't think you're broadcasting.
Oh, no? Why is
really?
That? You listen on the radio or on the stream, Bob?
No, I have you on the radio, and I turn the radio on and off. I'm not pulling a prank. I did it 2 or 3 times on the radio. I don't think you're broadcasting.
Okay. Oh, well, you know what? Rob isn't here with his phone, so he's working on something diligently. So he's on top of that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. No. I just wanted to share that with you.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
All right, thanks. Bye. Bye. All right, yeah, Rob is working on it now, so we're going to see what's happening.
The stream's still
working. Of course.
The stream is working, though, so that's okay. I know we have...
I'm looking at the levels on the stream here, because I have that in front of me, and yes, I see we are blipping when the stream is going, so I know we're doing that. Yes, we're still there.
Okay, well, let's go back. We'll go back to the phones and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hello, Chris and Ray.
Yes. What's up, John?
Happy Memorial Day to everybody, and a big thank you to all those who have served and fallen for our country and those who are serving today.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, John. Thank you for bringing that up. That was nice of you. It was smart of you. Yes.
Yes, got to do that. You know, there's a lot of respect for those that serve. So,
you're absolutely right.
Anyhow, Chris, I got an honor group of the day for you.
As
you guys were discussing getting stuff in a garage, and Ray knows most of the fleet that I had over the years, about the only thing that fit well in my garage that was built in with the house in 1964 was my MGB.
Yeah.
I sit there and I go, the honor group of the day should be the builders that built the houses way back when. And I said, I looked at my MG in the garage and said, I wonder what a 64 Impala would be like trying to shoehorn it in here.
Yeah.
John? Is it too shallow? Is it too low? What's up with your garage? Why won't it
The only thing that I've ever managed to keep in the garage, I had, let me see, the MGB, had a Mustang convertible, and a Pontiac G6 convertible. But you had to put the top down and pretty much do like the Dukes of Hazzard to get on the larger cars. The MG was the only one I could get the driver's door open, and that's with it pulled all the way as far to the right as I could.
You know, it's so funny because you said your garage was built with the house in 1964. I had a garage that was built in 1925 back in Brooklyn that the only thing that would fit in there was a Model T.
Probably. They were a little bit narrower back then.
But it's like you say, that garage housed the TR6. That was the only thing that fit in there. I tried to get my 84 Corvette in the garage, and I couldn't even, the fenders would hit either side of the door.
The other thing was, too, though, Chris, I don't know if it made a difference. You did have, when you have shelving unit in there and other stuff on the sides, that makes it a little a bit of an issue. But, yeah, garages were definitely not built the same back then as they are now. That's for darn
sure. Voice, it's perfect. With voice, forget about it.
Right. You know, I almost built myself out of my garage, and I'll tell you how. I had my Pontiac in the garage many times over the years, and it fit. And then I had it in the storage garage. And then it went into the restoration process. So it wasn't at my house for a while. And in the meantime, I built a shelf unit on the back wall of my garage where I could put my snow tires, and I have engines underneath that, and to maximize some space. And when I brought the Pontiac back, I never took that into consideration. And now that car fits between that shelf unit and the garage door. When I close it, I can't get around it in the front or the back with the door closed. I mean, it's that close. It's by a matter of like 2 inches.
My gosh.
I've got like 30 feet of depth in the garage, which is great. And I have, like you did, shelving units on the back wall. But right. I was still able to get my convertibles in the garage and put the snowblower behind it.
Yeah.
Winter action.
Exactly.
Yeah, I have the snowblower on one side of the garage and the Chrysler 300 on the other side. They both can't occupy the same side of the garage. It won't work.
No.
It won't work. The Chrysler's too long. I'll have the back of it sticking out in no time with the snowblower on the same side. Right. So they have to occupy different sides of the two-car garage I have. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and Ray being from the engineer physics department can tell you that old saying of two objects can't occupy the same space at the same time.
Yes.
Or they can, but it gets real ugly. That was like a codicil.
And insurance companies get involved. We're lawyers.
Right. Yeah, very true. Sure. All right, John, thanks for that info.
Guys, have a safe Memorial Day and enjoy the rest of the afternoon. We got some great weather today.
Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
John, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Yeah, right. Stay well.
All right. You know, it seems like we are having some trouble with the audio signal today, but you can listen on the stream. We're on ncradio.org, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and Odyssey, and also on motormouthradio.com. If you scroll down a little bit, there's a Listen Live tab where you can check. So our friends who listen that way have been reporting in. What do you got, Rob?
We just heard might be an outage at the tower. We'll find out in 10 minutes if we're back on the air.
Okay.
But the stream is going.
The stream is going. So unlike the Flomax commercials, the stream is fine. Thank you, Rob.
But it's the tower. The tower.
Rapunzel, the tower.
Rapunzel.
All right. Well,
hopefully in 10 minutes.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob. Right.
Checking in and getting all that cool information. That's good to know. Hey, another friend of ours, I want to throw a shout out to Chassis John. I don't know if he probably can't hear us today. He's laid up. He's out of service right now. He's having some bad luck with his back. So we hope that he can recover real fast and get the help he needs and get back to work, damn it.
Yeah, so. Chassis John's getting his chassis worked on.
Exactly. Nice. And Jeep and Al, now he went on a road trip last week down to Florida. He took his Ram truck and his big travel trailer and he towed it down. And he had some trouble like with his exhaust. He's fixing things on the fly as he goes. And he's going to stop at, B-U-C-C-E-S. I don't know how you say that. I guess I would say Bucky's. Supposedly,
I was going to say, be careful when you do say that.
Yeah, it's probably it's one of the best truck stops I think for pulled pork sandwiches I've heard in the in the place. So Al's on the road; he's listening to us on the stream, so we know that's working well.
Yes,
all that cool stuff.
Right, you could listen when you're 350 miles away, but you can't listen across town. Got it.
Right. So we should be listening to Uncle Tony in a couple of minutes. He'll give us a call. And don't forget, June, coming up now on June 12th, down in Desertland in Orlando. That's that new phenomenal place, that destination spot for all car guys. They're having their model contest from 10 to 4 on the 12th. And it's going to be, if you haven't, I haven't been there, but it is basically a shopping mall that's been repurposed as a car guy's paradise. And, you know, I don't want to get into more of that because we do have a call, but check out Desertland. And let's go to the phones and fun to say hi. You're on with the Motor Mouths.
What's happening, man?
Here he is, Uncle Tony. How you doing, brother?
Hey, Uncle Tony!
What's going on, guys?
You know, Tony, I got to tell you something. We don't have you on enough. It was last September 19th that you were on. We got to keep you in a tighter rotation. But I know the orbit you run in is tough, man. You're always busy.
Yeah, 7 days and nights a week, but this is all part of it.
Yeah. Well, and we thank you for making some time for us on a Sunday. I'll tell you something. The impetus for this whole thing, for this call, is I watched a video of yours titled Inflation, Collapse, War and Famine, Time to Get on Your Bike and Ride. And
isn't that awesome stuff?
Well, let me tell you something, Tony. Really, and I mean this heartfelt. I told this to Chris. That video spoke to my soul. I mean, and a lot of stuff you've done has done that, but that hit me, and I had to go see the other videos you referenced in that one, and I said, oh, now I see how this came about. And I'd like to talk about that with you a little bit, because it's a topic that a lot of our guys, I think, it'll resonate with.
Well, I think it's something that more and more people are starting to wake up to.
Okay.
You know, I mean, things have been bad for a long time, a really long time. And it's something that finally stuff is becoming so obvious, it's becoming so over the top, so bad that the average person is starting to wake up and say, hey, wait a minute, things ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're seeing that more and more and more. And as we go forward, as car people, bike people, gearheads, right, these are realities we're going to have to deal with.
Right.
The realities we have to deal with right now. You know, bad parts, shortages of parts, fuel, so on and so forth, and you know, a lot of people, let me hear your thoughts on all this.
Well, you're right, and I'm with you on everything. We've all felt the part shortage. We've all had the cam and lifter failures. I was just dealing with a car. Yeah, you know, I thought of you just the other day. I'm working on a Buick at the shop. It's an 8-cylinder Buick with a points ignition, and the thing's running like crap. It had a muffler explosion. So I'm looking for burned exhaust valves and all sorts of. It ends up, I said, you know what? Let me just change the points and condenser in this thing. And I took a used set out of an old distributor and got this thing.
It worked fine, right?
The only thing that got me perplexed was I'm trying to set the dwell with my old Sun tach and dwell meter. A lot of people don't even know what that is anymore. And when I got anywhere over 24 degrees of dwell, the car would run worse. This thing is running like a champ at 10 degrees of dwell.
Holy smokes.
Sure.
And I've never seen that before, and I don't know why. But what I did is I said, you know what? I'm not going to force myself on this car. I'm going to let the car tell me what it wants.
Right.
And it wanted 10 degrees of dwell and a little bit of richness in the carburetor, and I drove it and drove like a dream. So, but I don't know why. And I'm scratching my head, and I said, "Damn! If I was down in Tennessee, we could spitball this."
Well, dude, that's funny because my old Sun tech only will register at like 32 degrees of dwell, no matter what car I hook it up
on. It's broken.
It is.
So I know. So let me ask you a question.
Yeah,
you had 10 at idle, right?
Yes.
What happened? You gave it some gas.
Yeah, this is at idle. Yeah. Yeah, this is at idle speed, about 600 RPM, right?
Right, but now let's say you buzzed the gas. Did it change at all?
I don't remember looking at that. I know I was looking for Like I said, as I increased the dwell, looking at the gauge, as soon as I hit 20 and above, 25 and above, it started to run like a bag of turds. It was like running like crap. Idle was dropping. It was running, you know, not smooth. So I cranked it back down. And there you go.
There were reasons for that, but off the top of my head, I can't think of them.
Yeah. I didn't know either.
So Uncle Tony, let me ask you, do you think it's going to turn into like Havana, Cuba in the next 10 years or so, where the whole town is going to be walking around with a bag of tools working on everyone's cars? You think it's going to get like that bad? Is that what we're projecting here, just out of curiosity?
It's different. It's different. Havana, Cuba is an example, right? But about 10 years ago, I don't know if you guys, you know, Brian Loans, he's one of the announcers for NHRA. He has a website called Bankshift.com.
Oh, yeah, Bankshift, okay, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so he redid a thing, I guess it was about 10 years ago, called Post-Apocalyptic Hotline. Because I've been sitting around for the last 20 years waiting for this to happen, you know. I made all my preps 20 years ago. I moved to Tennessee. I got into precious metals. I, you know, eliminated all debt. I've got an analog life. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I'm already like way ahead of the game with this. All analog except for YouTube.
Right. Right.
Like I make my living in the most technical way possible, but I, you know, my personal life is as simple as it could be. So
that's great. That's actually pretty cool.
Post-apocalyptic hot running.
Uh-huh.
And see, here's what I think is going to happen. Here's the basic scenario I think is going to happen. I think sometime before the end of this year, right? I think we're going to have a banking crisis.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have a currency crisis. It's almost mathematically baked in the cake.
Okay, so like a recession, the value of the dollar is going to drop, I'm assuming. We're going, right?
It's not a recession. If you look, there's the mainstream media, the mainstream financial press, they'll keep throwing around the word recession, right?
But right.
It's not a recession, it's a depression. And it's not really even a depression, it's the end of a super cycle. So you have to be familiar with Elliott Wave and quantitative cycles. We're at the end of a quantitative super cycle, and it started around 1995-2000. This is the end of it. And at this point, if everything goes the way it looks like it's going to go, the dollar is going to basically cease to exist in the form that we know it today.
Oh, okay.
Now, you talk about bubbles, and like we're in the everything bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the real estate bubble, the market bubble, this, the debt bubble, that, all these bubbles. And people use the word bubble. They don't really understand what the term actually means. When something is in a bubble, it means that when the bubble pops, it's as if it was never there.
Okay.
Now, follow along. The current everything bubble that we're in can trace its roots back to August 15th, 1971, which is when Nixon closed the gold window to international redemption. And from that point, we've been a completely fiat currency. We should have had a depression sometime around 1979, 1980. Reagan was elected. What Reagan did at that point, we're facing a depression. We had crazy inflation. You guys are old enough to remember this.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Crazy inflation. We had a manufacturing route. It was terrible. Okay,
right.
We were on the verge of a depression, and what Reagan did was he handed over the economic policies of the country, basically the running of the country, to Paul Volcker of the Fed.
Mm-hmm.
Volcker passed it on to Alan Greenspan.
Right.
And from 1980 on, we've had 1981, 1982 on. We've had a completely artificial economy. It's based on nothing except, you know, the promises.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, when this bubble can trace its roots back to August 15th, 1971, and when this bubble pops, you're going to see all of the cash, the basic cash values for things revert back to that level. So if, let's say, the house you're living in right now has a cash price of $500,000, but in 1971, the cash price on it was $35,000. It's going back to that.
Oh. Okay.
That's not good for your real estate guys, Chris.
Yeah, so basically what I'm trying to get here is that at one time a dollar bill had an amount of gold to back it up. That was to show the value of it.
The dollar is defined, right? Listen, the dollar is defined as 1 ounce of gold, or silver rather, 1 ounce of silver. That's the constitutional. Right. It's 700 and something, 796 grains of silver. It is 1 ounce. And I could be off on that number, but it's 1 ounce of silver is a dollar.
Right.
The ratio was $20 to 1 ounce of gold.
Okay.
All right. So silver, our currency and our economy was based on silver. Mm-hmm. China's economy and currency has been based on silver for 12,000 years. South America, silver. Right. So, but commerce, international commerce and banking, silver is just too cumbersome. And so that's why you had gold.
Okay.
So at all of our international trade was convertible to gold. All of the money that went out in terms of trade was convertible directly to gold up until August 15th, 1971.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, right. Am I getting way too far off?
It's deep. And I tell you, you're talking about convertibles, and I want to bring something out of that video, and it was something you said that I agree with. Things that make us happy. Internal combustion, banging gears, revving stuff to valve flow, popping a clutch, all good, cheap fun. So that part of it, I think a lot of people, ourselves included, will gain a lot by going back to the basics, and like you've been doing by buying up these motorcycles. And I swear to God, if I don't know where you found that Suzuki, but if I saw that thing, I would grab it in a half a second.
I was just rolling around with it about an hour ago.
Oh, you know, there's something about those UJM4s that I love the feel of. That's why I ended up buying a BMW 4-cylinder, because it's just that. It's like an electric motor kind of power. It just comes and rolls on, and especially if you do velocity stacks, jets, and a Kirker pipe. Oh boy, you know
the problem with that Suzuki, right? I bought it. Okay, so here's what happened, right? When I got away from Nitro, right? I was like, I got to get away from cars altogether. I don't want to have anything to do with cars. So I got rid of everything. I went cold turkey, and I just went strictly motorcycles. So for about 5 years, all I did was screw around with motorcycles. Bought and sold hundreds of the things. When I left my house in New York, when I left to move to Tennessee, I had 28 motorcycles in my house, right? And I had the gamut. At the time, I had a 900RR Honda. I had a TL 1000. You know, I was into sport bikes.
Yeah.
We had a street race Suzuki, like a Katana
the Katana was
and
hot.
And I had a bunch of classic stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And Sportsters. I got a thing for Ironhead Sportsters.
Mm-hmm.
So when I left New York, I got rid of everything except my Sportsters. So I came to Tennessee with 7 Ironhead Sportsters and a 2-stroke Yamaha, because I needed that too.
Okay.
And one by one, I got rid of them all. The third time I got hit by a guy making a left turn, I says, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah.
Because I've had, three times I got hit.
Wow. Wow.
One time I shattered my tibia. It was a mess, right?
Yeah.
So I says, I'm done with this. I'm just done. So I got rid of the last one. Then about last September, it was like the last time I talked to you guys.
Uh-huh.
I'm going through Facebook Marketplace, and a 2002...
Yeah.
Sportster 83R pops up.
And that's a great
now,
bike.
This,
yeah.
Well, it's a turn of a bike is what it is.
Well.
But there's something about that particular bike that talked to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the color, the stand. I have no idea
the
what
way it
is,
looks.
But that particular bike talked to me.
No, because I remember when you got it and you debuted on a channel, I'm like, that's a nice looking Sporty. I'm looking at a 95 right now, an Evo Sporty, and people are like, why? You're a big twin guy. I'm like, something about this bike just looks right. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought that bike, and then I says, this is too nice to just to because the bike's clean, okay?
Yeah.
So I said, this is too nice to like ride every day, rain, shine, puddles of mud and everything else. I'll put something else up. So I bought this Buell Blast.
Right.
As it turns out, this Buell Blast is the most fun motorcycle I have ever owned in my life.
Yeah, they used to use them up here for motorcycle training all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always looked down on him. I was like, what the hell would you bother with something like that for? Well, mine has a Vanson Hines pipe, carbs been jetted, a lot of the, you know, all of the trinkets have been taken off of it, so now it's just this clean, naked street fighter, cafe racer type of thing that is literally the most fun I have ever had with an engine.
Right. Oh, yeah. You know, Chris, I don't know if you got to see it, but Tony did have a quote on one of the bikes he bought, which is kind of cool. It's a 93 Shatter, and he said, you know, this is the bike I bought for just when you want to be the most obnoxious dickhead in the bunch.
It's the truth, man.
We may get bounced off the same, but I mean, you're right. I mean, we all kind of go through that sometimes. It's,
yeah. Love it.
You know what I mean? You get invited someplace, you're going to go to a wedding or, you know, or a funeral or something. You know, you don't want to just roll up there with just like, you know, a regular bike. You want apes and like, you know, glorious dark green paint.
Exactly.
That's that green one I saw with the engine in pieces.
But, you know, Chris, but I tell you, Tony thought of it the way you would have, where he said, hey, you know what? Even if this motor isn't worth it, which it wasn't, there's more than $200 worth of chrome on the thing. I mean,
yes.
The whole front end, you just unbolt that and sell it for like a grand, you know?
Yeah, and to make your money.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I want the bike.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You know, well, I know you got plans.
The whole retro cruiser thing is huge, and I was thinking about buying a retro cruiser just because. And then I said, well, why do I want to buy a retro cruiser? I'll just get a retro bike. So I bought the 61 Sportster.
Right.
Which is a kick only. I mean, it's the drum brakes. It's just brutally simple.
They don't get more simple than that. Yeah.
No. And then I bought a Honda Super Cup.
Right.
Are you guys familiar with these things?
You know, they've been in my orbit. I've never owned one. I've never ridden one, but I'm familiar with them.
Super Cub.
The Super Cub is the most... Okay, so the original Super Cub. So Chiyo Honda built this thing in 1958, right, for the Japanese market. Then they started bringing them over here in 1960 or 61. And you know the song Little Honda by the Beach Boys?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, this is the bike that they sung about.
I thought they were singing about the Dream.
No. Okay. It's actually the Super Cup.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I've seen these when I was a kid. Yeah, the red and white ones. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's been in continuous production all over the world now since 1958 in all different forms. It was in a 70, a 90, and now it's the 125. But it's the same, like the same architecture, the same shapes, the same everything. So it's totally retro.
Right.
So it's the most sold. It's the most sold motor vehicle in all of history. They've built over 100 million of these things.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That's
all
crazy.
Over the world.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
And Honda started bringing them back here to the States in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
And I had to buy one of those.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's something to have in a collection.
And it's a light bike, right? It's like an inner city type of bike, I would think. You don't want to put this thing on a road, do you?
Mm. No.
It's a runaround.
It's 58 miles an hour on level ground. It slows down to around 45 on a typical, like, uphill run.
Yeah.
But for around town, I cannot tell you guys how many times. You know, YouTube is a stressful thing, guys. I mean, I've got to tell you, if you've ever done it, you can't believe the stress that's involved in this stuff. So I'll come home at night, 11 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, all stressed out, and I'll jump on the Super Cub and buzz around my neighborhood at 25 miles an hour.
There you go.
And all of the stress goes away.
I know it's got to be kind of stressful because now I see you filming yourself a lot, so that's telling me something.
Well, say that again?
I said it must be stressful because I noticed that you're filming yourself a lot now, so that's kind of telling me something. But that's cool.
Kathy's busy running the rest of the business.
Yeah, I know. You guys are growing, and that's great. I think that's fantastic. It's really good. But you know what, Tony? We have to take our bottom of the hour break, and when we come back, I want you to hang with us. I want to talk about another thing you mentioned about guys who have skills, who can work with their hands, right? So, but first we have to see if we have a little bit of business. Chris, do we have a bottom of the hour Motormouth Radio thing that you do?
Of course we do. This is Motormouth Radio, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, of course, at the bottom of the hour, we have the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. And this week, if you spent most of your free time getting your car or motorcycle looking good for the summer season, but your tool bench looks like a cyclone hit it, Well, if the car looks fantastic, all shined up, ready to go, the bike looks awesome, the chrome is gleaming, but the tool bench is still cluttered with the previous winter projects, the broken lamp, the stuck paint lid, the car stereo pushed aside in pieces, box of carburetors, distributors, alternators, and water pumps just waiting to be rebuilt. And of course, as our Uncle Yvonge will always say, his favorite tool bench mishap, there's every toolbox drawer open with random hand tools spilling out. So if you spent the days cleaning up the car or the bike, and you need even more time to shovel your way to the tool bench, then you are part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
There you go. There you excellent. Go. Tony,
I'm sure. You just described my life. it's absurd.
Every week, Chris comes up with a golden nugget down there at the bottom of the hour, and it's there's always people who respond and say, "Hey, how did he know that was me?"
Yeah, I'm like, is this guy is following me around and looking at the background of everything?
Right, right. Well, I'll tell you what else.
We're all the same, Uncle Tony. We're all the same.
The other thing that you want to remember is that to listen to the Unforgettables every Saturday night at 9 on this station, where Michael Anthony presents 2 hours of jazz and standards with artist profiles and guests who make the music happen. So we got to take a couple of spots here. Tony, hang with us. We'll be back in a minute.
Another one.
Here's the second part of my personal homage to life right now on Motormouth Radio. We'll be back with more of Uncle Tony DeFeo from Uncle Tony's Garage with Ray Guarino, Chris Switzer on 90.3 WHPC. Keep it where you got it.
Take this job and shove it. Working here no more. My woman done left and took all of the reasons I was working for.
My name is Carl Anthony with Automoblog and Auto Vision News, and you're listening to Ray and Chris on Motormouth Radio, WHPC 90.3 FM.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the expert at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y sí, hablamos español.
More information is available at 516-593-0920 or online at celebritychasecollision.com.
Hey, you, get over here. Every Sunday, 12 to 1, you are going to tune in to hear the Motormouths, my friends Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. 90.3 FM, WHPC. You might learn something.
All right, we're back. Don't get in my way. And you know why.
I don't know. I got punched out of the music there. I didn't hear it. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. Little David Allen Coe for our enjoyment today.
Ah.
So, Tony, I want to talk about your thoughts about guys with skills.
Well, I mean, you have to go back to this whole thing, which is, basically, it's going to be a reshuffling of the economy, of civilization, of everything. We've reached the end of a cycle.
As
we go into this new thing, the opportunities are going to be off the chain. But you say, okay, so here, think of it this way, guys. Think of it this way, right? Who's the most notoriously powerful secretive group in the world?
Wow.
The Masons.
Well,
right.
They're pretty good. Yeah, you know, that's a good one.
I got that right.
Yes. So now, right, where did the Masons get their start? How did they become so powerful?
Their craft?
I would have said from the Illuminati, but...
Well, pre-Illuminati. Pre-Illuminati.
About the Knights Templar?
Pre all of that.
Wow, pre that. I mean, that's going back pretty far.
The Masons gathered their power through the generations, through the centuries, because everything was made out of stone.
Well, stone, yes.
You needed a stone mason to do anything.
Right. Yes, to build a house.
They had more power than the governments. They had more power than the banks. They had more power than anybody. The Masons, mm-hmm. as a union, the civilization would not exist without the Masons.
Right.
And so that's how they gathered the power that they had. Okay. So now you go back. Let's go back to this country. So I mean, you could take examples all through history, right? Now you go back to this country, right? And you look at the Industrial Revolution, and you look at the automobile revolution, right? And who were the most powerful and influential people in society? Who carried the most weight? It was the guy who kept everything running. It was the inventor. It was the builder. It was the you go back Go back to the 1930s, right? American folk heroes were IndyCar racers and stuff like that. You go back to the 1960s, American folk heroes were drag racers, right?
Right. So engineers like W.O. Bentley and people like that built cars, Bugatti. You talk about guys like those guys, right? Hans Luinka, who built the Czechoslovakian car. So we're talking about those type of individuals. Well,
What about like a Roebling? You know, you want to talk about bridges?
Roebling, Henry Ford. Obviously, okay. I forgot. Yeah, so those in this country,
those are the icons. Okay, but the average. The mechanic, the craftsman, the builder, the guy who could keep the machinery running had an extremely important part in society.
Yes. Agreed. Right?
Right?
Yes.
Now, from the 1970s on, from that period, 1971 on, our role in society became less and less important as it became more and more a disposable society.
Right.
The disposable society is all based on debt.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, as the debt dries away, it goes away, we still have the infrastructure of the world that needs to be maintained.
Right.
As the consumer economy disappears and a more grounded economy grows, the people who can build things, make things, keep them running, maintain them, those are the ones who will once again become the most important staples of any community.
Yeah, and Tony, that's what you would mention, and I've told my wife this a long time. I said, listen, the guys who can fix stuff, like who do you call, Tim Allen said it on Home Improvement years ago. Yeah, it was in a stand-up act where he said, what are men for? Yeah, they're here for vehicle care and lawn maintenance. Like, that's what
it's true. Tony, you definitely have a point, because there are individuals and a lot of them that push paper from one side of the desk to the other, and they're making a good living. What's going to happen to them? They're going to pretty much disappear because they can't fix anything, right?
Right.
Well, that's a problem if you're one of those people.
Yes.
Right.
It's a problem.
Like I said, I told people this, I've worked in engineering all of my adult life in all the jobs I've had, and I've always been on the technical side, not the paper side, and I work with some of the most brilliant engineers there are, but if you give the guy a screwdriver, you put it through his hand. They always came to me like, okay, can you make this work? Yeah, I can make this work.
And I've been the same way, Tony. I've fixed everything I've had. I've had almost a 60-year career of fixing things, and with questionable amounts of success. But it's still enough to save a ton of cash in my home revitalization business, where I could fix my washing machine and my dryer and my dishwasher and my refrigerator and my stove
Chris,
in the same house.
The thing that I really like that Tony does, though, is something that I know I try to do, impart it on the younger generations.
Yes.
Get more guys and girls doing this stuff. Yeah, when you had Uncle Crystal welding, I was like, yes, there you go.
Yeah.
She'll be back.
I don't know if she's stuck with it, but you know what? I have a couple daughters, and they said, they actually want to play around with stuff like that. I'm like, okay, we'll get you out there. We'll burn something up. No problem.
Yeah. No, but I'm with you 100% on this, Tony. This is definitely moving me. You're right. The repair person will rise.
Absolutely. The person. Well, who rules Bartertown? Okay. So I mean, I'm not saying we're going to a barter economy, right? But just to use that as an example, if you don't have a skill, you have to offer up a good,
right,
in exchange for another good. But if you have the skill, you have to offer up nothing but your skill or your knowledge in order to maintain the good. So now, who has the upper hand?
Right,
exactly. I had a very good friend of mine that one time said to me, "If I need something fixed in my house, I'll just work overtime." And I said, "Well, what happens if the overtime isn't available and that thing breaks anyway?" Well, who's going to fix it?
That's the thing. When things are stable, that mindset works, because you can just work and make more money and pay somebody. And
but you see, here's the thing, right? You just said it, right? When things are stable.
Right, exactly.
But here's the thing, okay? Here's what you got to really wrap your head around this, right? We're all about the same age. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm 60. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. We never knew a normal world. We never knew a stable world.
Right.
Everything that we've known all like through our entire lives has been an aberration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now comes the time to clear that out and return to basics, return to normalcy.
Let me throw something out to you. I was talking with my wife, my younger daughter, who's 25. We were having dinner the other night, and I said, one of these things that recurs and comes back to me, and I was watching a YouTube video about it, and I said, what if this is all like somebody's diorama and we're just like the pieces? What if they reset it? Like you go back to the Knights Templar and they said, you know what, this didn't work. Let's get rid of that. Okay, now we have Romans that worked. They fed everybody to the lions. Get rid of that. And then you got Christianity and you just go up through history and maybe they're just resetting the playing field and we're just in this current iteration.
And, well, the term, there's two terms that are going around, right? And I'm going to tell you right now, okay, I'm 20-something years into this, okay? Mm-hmm. So I've been watching and waiting and bide my time. But there are I don't want to get too far into conspiracy stuff or anything. What we consider conspiracy stuff. But as you see, things that were conspiracy are becoming their daily fact now.
Yeah.
There are two terms that anybody who's really interested needs to become acquainted with. And one of them is the Great Reset.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Which is a mathematical certainty. It's not a conspiracy. You have two sides on this. One side wants to push us all into a central bank digital currency, and the other side wants to return to sound money. Which one is going to win? I hope it's the sound money people.
Yes,
if it's the digital money people, we're all screwed.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Either way, it's a certainty. And then the other phrase people might want to become acquainted with is the Great Awakening.
Okay.
Which is something that's happening really in big numbers now and has over the last, let's just say, 2 years without getting into anything political.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good food for thought. And people, I hope they wrote that down and they should listen to that. But now, more importantly, I'm watching the clock. We're getting close on time. I know you kind of wing it. You do stuff like if you kind of work like we do sometimes. You'll pick something up and say, okay, let's talk about this. Here's your new
video. Yeah.
So,
we've been doing it for 20 years that way.
I know we really can't ask you what's next out of Uncle Tony's garage, but do you have, I mean, and I was explaining to Chris how you work with your projects, how you get into them, you build them, and then you hand them off to people, which is fantastic. I like that.
I love that. I love it. It's fantastic.
My happy place is in the shop. I've done as much drag racing as I ever cared to do. I've done as much street racing as I ever care to do. I've done as much travel as I ever care to do. So now I want to just stay in my shop, build stuff, and hand it to other people and say, here, man, go make smoke.
Yeah, I kind of like
back when it's broken. Let's fix it.
That's my happy place, too. I was out there yesterday. And I always said the best time to go out, like if you have a home garage like you do, like well, yours is attached, mine isn't. I said the best time to go out there is in a snowstorm or in a deluge rainstorm, because no one in the house is ever going to come out and try and get you or bother you. You're safe out there until the weather breaks.
But yeah, Tony, what a fantastic attitude to have. If you really think about that, that just is just sharing your knowledge and your technique and having someone else, mess it up and bring it back and fix it. And you're, I'm sure it's a massive learning project too. It's just to me, I'm thinking about this as we're talking about it. I'm going, there's nothing that's bad about this. It's all good.
And not only and now he shares it on YouTube for everybody to see.
Yeah.
I tell everybody who gets involved with me with any of this stuff, right? If you don't break this, I'm going to be pissed.
Yeah.
If this comes back, if you could drive it back into the shop, I'm going to be mad.
There you go.
See, that's funny because I just learned a term recently called mechanical sensitivity.
Ooh.
And that's what I am. I try and use it to the point where it doesn't break. Like I try and get it to that point, wherever it is, where it's not going to snap in half. And I'll try and just keep reaching that point. That's where. So you have absolutely no mechanical sensitivity at all.
Well, no, but I do. I do with like my own personal machinery.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know what I'm saying? But the stuff that you send out into the world, the whole idea of hot rodding is to go out there and push it to the max, push it to where it breaks, then fix what broke and try to go to the next step. improve as you go along. The breaking of things is just part of that process.
Part of
the engineering process, the research and development.
Yeah, and it gives me something to look forward to. It gives me something to do. Keeps me out of trouble.
You are wise beyond your years. Wise beyond your years. I love it.
I've been called a lot worse than that.
Yeah, that's true. But hey, it's cool.
No, I just love that. I love the fact that what you work on, the projects, like the Miata with the slant six in it. I mean, I was just completely blown away by where did anybody, who came up with, what concept, what great goose moment was that?
I had a Miata. I looked at it, and I saw these LS slops and big block slops and all this other stuff, and I was like, wait a minute now, right? The slant six is one of them orphan motors. It's like, really, what the hell do you do with the damn thing? But then I said to myself, well, a 170, the small version, is a notoriously high revving motor, right? And it's relatively light. I said, if I stick this in the slant in the Miata, the whole thing will be behind the front axle center line, you know, and it was like actually a mid-engine car.
Yeah, it was almost in the front seat. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, you got the last plug. You're staring at it. It's right where the radio is.
Right.
Well, the doghouse I built for that car literally came to exactly the end of the original dashboard. Yeah. So, like when you're sitting in the car, you really didn't notice that you had that big of a doghouse in it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. But the motor was the entirety of the motor is behind the front axle center line.
Right.
Well, actually, had a better weight distribution than a stock Miata.
I will tell you something, Tony. Through the years, I've always been a GM guy. I've been a fringe Mopar guy. I've had a few through my career. But lately, I've been finding myself wanting to buy a slant six. I don't know why. I do.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a sickness.
And I don't know why. I'm like, because if anything, I'd be like a 440 or a 383 guy. But, you know, I don't know. I think because I kind of like the quirky stuff, too. So, you know, got my eyes out for Valiant.
All of those inline sixes, all of the old analog carbureted inline sixes from the 70s on back are just magic.
Yeah.
There's just something about them. They're just so simple and agricultural and friendly and, I don't know, it's hard to put my, they're so easy to work on. You know, it's like, they're magic. Once you get sucked into that, because I mean, I've done the blown nitro thing, man. Yeah. I did top fuel. I went there.
Sure.
And it's like, okay, done with that. Now let's go back to happy stuff.
Right.
You know, let's go back to stuff that doesn't try to kill you when you actually try to start it.
The last slant six I had, an intimate life with was the car I took driver Ed in 1974. It was like a loaded. What the hell was it? No, it wasn't even a Valiant. But yeah, I can still hear it. You can hear the sound. You can hear that one barrel sucking. You can never forget the sound of those things.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, I had a girlfriend that had a Valiant, and she ran it continuously on a quart of oil. It literally, the oil was, you pulled the oil stick, and it would be like this little tip at the edge of it every time I would check the oil on the car.
Boy.
And she's like, yeah, it runs fine. Who cares?
So I'm going to make a prediction, and it has to do with slants and inline Chevys and Fords and all these AMCs, all of them, right? All of these old things. I'm going to make a prediction. Over the next 3 years or so, you see how we've had muscle cars went berserk, right? Everything with muscle car went berserk.
Yeah.
Okay, the common family car is going to be the next thing to go absolutely nuts.
Why?
I honestly believe it's gonna eclipse the muscle car thing.
Well, it kind of is because wagons are ready. You can't get near a wagon. Four doors have already. I mean, you have the corner of that market, but even around here, four doors are popular now. Guys are scoping out because you can't find the twos anymore.
Yeah, you can't find the twos anymore. Yeah. So you have to go with the more doors. But Tony, what is your genesis for this thought? What's your theory?
Over the last 15 years, they've stuffed everything they possibly can electronically into these cars.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes.
Now, in the old days, you guys remember, you go into an auto parts store, and they had literally, you got a mom-and-pop store, and literally every single part you could use to keep the average car on the road was right there. You need a water pump for your Chevelle, it's right there. You need front-end parts for your Mustang, it's right there. You know, you need a transmission overhaul kit for your torque flight, it's there on the shelf.
Okay? Yep, right.
Literally everything went in. Okay, now it takes warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And instead of having just a handful of disposable parts on the car, right? Now there are thousands of disposable parts on a car. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen is, as we go forward, you've got a 10-year-old car, 12-year-old car, 15, it won't be supported anymore.
Right.
So, like the electronics. So literally everything you buy becomes a Dixie cup.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now these older analog cars, right? You could fix the headlight switch stops working, and you could take it apart.
Yeah.
Fix the contacts.
I did that. The springs went everywhere.
Yeah, right. Hold on that.
It's funny. You have touched on a theory that I've been talking about, and Ray has laughed at me for a while now. And I call them carb people. And what they are these individuals that have no technology in their vehicles. They have a Chevelle 300 with a straight six and a one-barrel carb and an AM radio, and that's it. It gets them from here to there. And they don't have to worry about any electronics whatsoever. And these people are going to, like, take over because the electronic cars are going to turn to dust, like you say. Mm. It's
exactly the epoxy. Right.
So I totally am with you on this. I am really with you on this. The carb people will, a carbureted vehicle is going to be the new valuable car because it's not attached to technology in any sort of way. Yeah. I know it's a similar scenario, but we're on the same wavelength here. I'm with you.
Wealthy people want things of lasting value.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Wealthy people are going to start seeking out when their McLaren can't stay 2 weeks out of the shop, and now it's completely done because the module that controls the whatever the hell it is no longer supported. Right. Now you've got a $300,000 ashtray right there, but in the meantime, that 300 Chevelle with a straight six.
Yeah.
That's something you can wax and you can love and you can drive down the road and your mechanic can fix it. And it's happy and simple and everything else. And those are the cars that are going to become the most valuable. And I mean in a very short period of time.
You know,
over the next 3 to 5 years, you're going to see an explosion in those cars.
Tony, people have asked us on this show a lot about trends. And, you know, we're not Kreskin. But they've asked, like, what's going to be the next collectible? And then what? You know, and I said, hey, you know what? I got a prediction. I made this prediction probably about 8 years ago. So when the cars from the 90s, late 80s and 90s cycle around and people want to maybe restore them, they're not going to be able to do it because they're not going to be able to find the modules, the computers, all the electrical stuff. Right. And that still is the case today. I mean, you can get an ECM because, you know, that there are places to do that, but you're not going to get the CAN bus stuff and the door modules and, you know, not even like that stupid CDI thing for your Suzuki. I mean, you had to find a used one. I'm sure you didn't find a new one.
Mm-hmm. I bought a new one. I bought a digital replacement.
Oh, so right?
I'm ready to throw points in it.
right.
You know what I mean? But I figured, well, the bike's all original. Let me just keep it original. Yeah, I bought it was only like $200. So I says, you know, the CDI unit. So I says, let me just throw this thing in there. And then if I got future problems, the hell with it. Because it's an old engine. It originally started out with points. So it's just a matter of changing the breaker plate.
I have never seen, even back in the day when I was running Japanese street bikes in the late 70s, I have never seen in modern times a Japanese bike that clean. That thing is just like museum quality.
That's what I was going to say before. I bought this bike because it looked grungy, and I was like, great, there's my shit weather, excuse my French, I didn't mean to say it. There's my bad weather motorcycle, right? And I brought it home and I cleaned it up. And it doesn't have a speck of rust on it.
That's like, a good-looking bike.
All right, Tony, we're at the end of the show. Can you give people your contact information, how they can find you, get a hold of you, and watch what you do?
Uncle Tony's Garage on YouTube.
Right, that's the best. I think we will have a link up on our site. Tony, we're going to run, but we thank you for coming on with us as always, brother, and we'll keep in touch. And now we found out how to get in touch with you. We got to go through Uncle Kathy. So
you got to go through Kathy. I don't answer. I didn't even look at my phone. I just you know, it's just one of those things.
Well, we thank you. Thank you for that, Tony. We'll be in touch, and we'll keep watching you on YouTube and enjoy your content. Thank you,
Uncle Tony. A great show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All
have
right,
a great one, guys.
Talk to you soon. Bye. All right, bye-bye.
Be safe.
All right, Chris, with that, we are at the end of this show. So what do we always say that John can't say today because he's laid up? What are you going to say?
Don't follow us home unless you're driving a slant six with a four-barrel carb and a hyper pack.
With a ham sandwich in the back. You got it. All right. For Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, Uncle Tony, we'll be back next week. See you with more Motor Mouth Radio, WHPC 90.3. See ya.
See you, bye.